Hello, listeners. Today is Wednesday, September 28th. Welcome to Behind the Numbers, Reimagining Retail, an e-marketer podcast made possible by Akinio. This is the show where we talk about how retail collides with every part of our lives. I'm your host, Sarah Lebo. Today's topic is a conversation between our own principal analyst, Yori Wormser, and Senior Director of Product Marketing for Akinio, Ali Hanyalolu, in which they discuss product activation. Then in our second half, Yori will join me to talk about retail automation. Let's listen in.
Hi, Ali. It's so great to have you here today.
Hey, Yori. I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty excited to hear what you're doing and what Akinio is doing, especially around product activation. So why don't we just jump right in and why don't you tell me a little bit about what product activation exactly is?
Oh, yes, I'll be happy to do that. Yeah, it's a relatively new concept, at least in the commerce space. But essentially, product activation is a strategy that takes a look at every possible touch point that a brand or a merchant will have with their buyers. And rather than looking at each one of those in silos, actually take a holistic look at them so that the experience that buyers have when it comes to products, the product experience, is not just meeting their needs, but is absolutely consistent wherever they may go. Today, that's been treated as sort of individual silos of channels where there's expertise or skill set. And product activation is essentially saying, look, take a more holistic view and see how you can improve across every channel or route to market that you need to be on.
So concretely, what are some of the ways that brands or retailers can address that? You know, what are some of the actions they need to take right now?
Right now, the first thing they need to do is get the information about the products and services and brand that they have in order and ensuring that there is a single source of truth, if you will, for all of that information, for all of the different individuals and teams and organizations that need to leverage that information on the channels that they are selling products on. If you don't have that single source of truth, it's not only going to be mistakes that will slip through, but it could just be missing information that buyers, whether they're B2C or B2B indeed, will be looking for to help them make informed decisions with you as a seller versus somebody else.
And so when you say a single source, is it just like product information or is it also digital assets like product images and things like that?
It's all of the above. Yeah. So it's all of that marketing related information. So the descriptions and compelling reasons to buy, but it's also those assets too. So imagery, not just product images, but what's sometimes called in situ images or lifestyle imagery. So you can see the product in a certain environment. Videos, even things like 3D click arounds and augmented reality are all key assets that drive that exceptional product experience that people are looking for. There's also all the technical data. So you need to provide that, all those things too. So the speeds and feeds and weights and heights, they need to be available, accurate, and in many cases with some countries that actually is a legal requirement with things like Natasha's Law in the UK, for example, providing allergy related information. So these all contribute towards the information that is part of a product activation strategy.
That's so interesting. I mean, a lot of companies are using your platform, so you probably have a really good insight into which channels are emerging, which may be a little bit overhyped. Do you want to give us a few of those insights? What are some of the two most important channels you see emerging right now?
Yeah, that's a good question. I get that one quite a lot. Or a related question, if I may, that I get is, what's the best experience on channel X that we should be meeting? And here's the challenge with that answer. We could talk about, you know, different types of channels that you could be on, maybe what's upcoming. But what makes that a difficult question to answer is that the channels that you need to be on next are going to be decided not by you, but by your customers. They are going to determine where you need to be. And so we've been spending a lot of time and asking a lot of questions about which channel should we be on? How can we orchestrate the journey in a way that follows what we want them to do? And the reality is, it's consumers are the ones that are omnichannel. What are they looking for? Well, yes, they're looking for multiple digital channels because there are so many of them available to them today, and they're using them to find information. Many consumers will start their search for a product on an online marketplace like an Amazon or eBay or something like that. But more and more consumers actually will want to go and interact with a person. So physical presence, brick and mortar, is not dead. In fact, we're seeing actually growth in things like pop-up stores and stores in stores, simply because customer acquisition cost on digital is getting more and more expensive. So a lot of brands and merchants are looking to a physical presence, A, for a lower customer acquisition cost, but also because they know their customers want that personalized expertise in deciding which products to buy. We've also got to keep in mind, there are going to be channels coming up that we don't know about yet. So I could talk about the metaverse, but I won't. But the thing is that, yes, there are going to be new things that we haven't thought about yet. And organizations have to be ready for those. One thing that many brands and merchants and manufacturers learned from the last 2-3 years in the pandemic is that you have to be agile and you have to be ready to pivot to whatever's coming next as quickly as you possibly can. And one of the ways to do that is to get your information and your architecture in order and ready for that next pivot.
I think later we're probably going to be in the second half of this podcast, we're going to talk about retail automation, and you brought up in-store, and I'm curious, a lot of these automated kiosks and things like that, how important is product activation for those?
Absolutely important. We have customers who are doing things like in-store digital kiosks, where you can go and have an experience with products that blends the two together. But that information, first of all, it also needs to be consistent with what is shown elsewhere, because they're going to be walking in with their phone and seeing what's on the website, or do that later on. But it also adds to need to have some unique touches for that particular experience itself. So a digital kiosk is certainly going to be much more asset heavy. It can probably be touch enabled. So there are things like 3D that can play a part of it. And we want to make sure that there is not lengthy information that's going to take me hours to read through like a book, but I get a quick snapshot of what I need to know about that product in a very compelling way. So these are sort of those nuances that need to be taken into account for each one of these channels or routes to market that is specific to that particular platform or channel, yet still reflects your brand and your products.
Yeah, and that probably extends to voice search and things like that too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. So I love talking about voice search. It is going to become a bigger thing in commerce as it has been for the last 5 years, but it will definitely grow and grow. And that just brings a new dimension to the kinds of information that needs to be shared with these consumers for that particular channel. But again, a single source of truth that is well-structured is able to handle that for you so that you are ready for when that comes along.
So we just discussed channels. What about fulfillment? Are you seeing any trends in fulfillment that's emerging? Big click and collect advances during the pandemic. What's new now?
Yes, we've seen that's another aspect of the digital world coming about with respect to things like click and collect. What's interesting about we're seeing when it comes to supply chain and fulfillment is just the numbers that are coming up with respect to the amount of money spent on product returns, whereby an incorrect product was purchased, for example, not just because it was faulty or something like this, and the resulting environmental impact that that's had. So it is rather scary how much is being spent and the impact that just the sheer product return is having in a world where we can buy products so quickly and easily at our convenience. That's going to impact not just brand reputation, but it's also a cost thing as well. It does impact the bottom line of many of these businesses, and especially important as we go into an era of, shall we say, economic uncertainty as well. So one of the things that organizations who are looking to reduce returns through the supply chain is ensuring that they are as transparent as possible with the products. For example, if I'm buying shoes as a simple example, and I don't know about you, but I'm a size 12. I buy a size 12 online and it's always just a little bit too big or a little bit too tight. Never consistent. So what some great brands are doing is they're actually saying, actually, your size that you order here may be a little bit large when you buy from us. So keep that in mind. And it's things like this. It's talking about the materials fully and describing the fact that this is actually a really thick inside lining. So again, maybe a little bit tight for you. So it's these kinds of transparency details that consumers are looking for and that brands can actually see a benefit from by a reduction in returns.
So return rate is probably one of the metrics you look at to see if you have successful product activation.
Yes.
What are some of the other metrics you're looking at?
Yeah. So in addition to the usual suspects like conversion rates and increase in sales, you'll also be looking at things like time to market or time to activation, if you will. As things get more and more competitive, we need to be able to ensure that we are launching products across all of those different channels as quickly as we possibly can. And misinformation or incorrect information or delays in information and assets should not be a problem. And so a product activation strategy can help resolve for that. We also look at things like purely just customer satisfaction and brand loyalty. And in many cases, good information that is provided and a great product experience isn't just going to drive greater satisfaction. It does drive greater brand loyalty. And in many cases, our research found that consumers are willing to spend more with a brand if they have that great product experience.
So I think we just have time for one more question, and that's around affiliate partners. How do you keep a consistent brand experience with your affiliates?
Yeah, affiliates. Let's put in there also social media influencers and others as well that are helping to promote your brand and products. Yes, you want to ensure that it feels like a sense of community and they're advocating for your products. But in many cases, they also want to leverage assets and information, maybe something that's unique to them so that they can stand out in the market as well. So that is something that is, if you will, a channel or route to market that brands and other merchants need to consider as well.
Ali, it's been great having you. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have today, but really a pleasure speaking with you.
Yeah, likewise. Thanks so much for having me. I hope to speak to you soon.
Thank you, Yori and Ali, for that great discussion. We're going to take a quick break and then we'll talk retail automation. But first, a quick word from our sponsor, Akinio. When it comes to creating great customer experiences, success is in the details. Akinio makes it possible to create consistent, engaging product stories across channels and touchpoints, so you can give customers a deeper product experience, accelerate time to market, and drive revenue. In today's omnichannel world, Akinio allows you to orchestrate the flow of every product detail at every step of the buyer journey. Learn more at akinio.com. That's A-K-E-N-E-O.com. Welcome back from the break. Thank you, Yori, for sticking around.
No problem.
All right, it's time for pop-up rankings, where we take a look at specific examples and we rank them. This week, I'm asking Yori his top three retail automation technologies to watch. So Yori, give me one of your top three retail automation technologies.
Yeah. So, I mean, the first one I think is important to look at is just drone delivery. And it's still pretty early, but it's becoming larger and larger more quickly than we expected. So it's definitely something I'm keeping an eye on this year.
Yeah, I'm looking at our forecast numbers. This is from August. It looks like we expect delivery drone units in the US this year to be around 34,000, 35,000, but then going up to 110,000 by 2024.
Yeah, that's right. And not only is it going up at like that crazy rate, it's also going faster than we expected, just because places like UPS and Walmart are expanding their drone delivery more quickly than we expected. And also Alphabet has its Wing subsidiary that's working with some retailers and abroad as well. So lots of developments going on here. I think the average consumer is not going to get a drone delivery this year. We're in 2023, but nonetheless, you're going to see a lot of activity around it and a lot of excitement, I think, too.
A couple weeks ago on the pod, I asked Blake and Andrew if they would let a drone deliver their hot coffee. Would you let a drone deliver your hot coffee?
No, it's going to drop it on me. So no, not that. But I wouldn't mind getting, let's say, a medicine from CVS if I'm sick, or a delivery food or something like that. That might work.
Yeah, that's such a great use, especially like when you're sick, you don't want to be going into CVS spreading that around. So
yeah, exactly.
I can definitely see the value there. All right, what is your number two retail automation technology to watch?
This one is kind of on the opposite extreme of drones, and that's fulfillment center automation. And it's on the opposite side because it's so widespread already. Amazon has automated most of its warehouses to some degree. Walmart's doing the same, moving to automate all of them. What we're seeing is that that's the trend throughout the industry. According to our numbers, 45% of fulfillment warehouses are automated right now, but that's going to go up almost about 50% by 2024. Not a huge jump in individual numbers, but just the vast range of automation, I think, is just going to become a crucial part of the fulfillment system.
You're getting at sort of my question here. If penetration is already quite high in this area, why is this so important to watch?
It's going to become a lot more sophisticated. So the automation that's in there right now is just kind of moving things around, but it's not really replacing humans. I think you're going to start to see a lot more automation that actually replaces a lot of the really menial and dangerous jobs within these warehouses that, frankly, a lot of these companies have problems hiring for. And, you know, addressing that shortage of workers and also just increasing the speed of fulfillment as a result.
I read today that the Jetsons came out on ABC on this week in 1962. So celebrating an anniversary. Robot workers, something they got right.
Yeah, but it's funny. I saw something else associated with the Jetsons that when people are projecting forward into the future, they get the technology right often, but they get the social dynamics totally wrong. Like they project the 1960s family structure into the future. And I think the same thing might happen with some of these technological advances in fulfillment centers. Yes, the technology is be there, but what does that mean for the future of work and for the future of employee relations? And I think there's a lot to be discussed there, and it's still unclear.
I like that question. We don't have a ton of time to dive into it today, but yeah, do robots make workers' lives easier, or do robots make workers expected to work like robots?
Yeah. Yeah. And can it be used as a union busting move, or does it make, as you said, does it make workers' lives better? It's just a lot of questions.
Sure. All right. We have time for one more. What is your final retail automation technology to watch?
Yeah, I struggled on this last one because there are a couple different ways to go with it. But I went with QR codes, which that's an existing technology. But I think we're going to see it continue to deepen. Right now, we see about 89 million people using QR codes. We expect that number to increase to 102 million by 2026. And what I think you're going to see is more seamless commerce developing from it. So right now, you're seeing a lot of people using it to get product information in stores or to get menus in restaurants. I think you might see opportunities for commerce, you know, in non-retail settings develop where people sort of just scan something and then buy it. And so more, not just more people using it, but more sophisticated use cases for QR codes as well.
Yeah, QR codes are really interesting to me. I had an experience recently, maybe not so recently now, where I went to a restaurant. The menu was on a QR code. That's normal, especially for New York right now. But before I could see the menu, I got an ad. Just the QR code menu was monetized. I had to watch an ad before I could figure out what I was going to order. So I know that that's not something we necessarily have figures on, but that's something to watch for me, where there's some sort of media, there's room for advertising.
Yeah, and it's not just advertising that you're selling, but also data for your own advertising. Now, a lot of companies are using QR codes just to get first-party data.
Sure, interesting. All right, well, thank you for talking to me today, Yori.
Glad to be here as always.
And thank you, Ollie, who joined us in the first half. Yori has a report coming out on retail automation later this year, so subscribers can look out for that at insiderintelligence.com. If you like our podcast, you should rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify. I want to read your comments. Also, we're on Instagram at behindthenumbers_podcast. Thank you to our listeners and to Victoria, who edits the podcast and keeps it automatic, supersonic, hypnotic, etc. We'll be back next Wednesday with another episode of Reimagining Retail, an eMarketer podcast made possible by Akinio. And you can tune in tomorrow for another episode of Behind the Numbers.